Welcome back to Footwork, a podcast for those who dream big, never settle, and make their own path. I'm Sean.
And I'm Dylan. Together with guests, we share stories and tips every Monday to educate, inspire, and create a community built of soccer players and dream chasers.
Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way.
Welcome to Footwork. So, Marcus Urban, welcome to Footwork.
Well, thanks for the invite, guys. Really honored to be here.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure talking to you guys.
Yeah, finally got it done. I mean, we were with Marcus in our coaching course. When was that? Back in November, and we've October.
Yeah,
October. Back in Bad Blankenburg, Germany, and we've had these plans for a while now. So it's nice that we finally got. Even though he's in his car at the moment, it's nice that we got the time to meet and connect again.
Well, the goal was to find a quiet place. And so it's a lonely parking lot. So it's fine. It should be nice.
Nice and quiet.
Amazing. We always start with our motto here, Marcus, which is make your own path. And as someone who, I mean, we can list off the resume of countries you've been to, the different cultures, the demands, the coaching courses, everything. But for you, what does make your own path mean to you?
Well, first of all, I'm really humble and happy that I'm actually doing what I'm doing, to be honest, right now, because it's always been my goal to work in football, soccer, whatever you want to call it. So basically, I started off actually in the US, to be honest. The first time I was coaching was in the US, YMCA, little soccer camp there, because I saw what they were doing and I was like, yeah, you're dedicated, you're definitely investing time, but no offense, you don't have a clue. And so I just kind of talked to them if they want some help, if I can help them a little bit. And so I brought some European soccer knowledge to the offensive of line coach. So and it helped, and it triggered so much. And then I started coaching and following on. In order to coach, it helps having like a sports science degree and stuff like that. So it all basically started in US, back in Texas, y'all.
Back in Texas. Wow. That's amazing.
So that's basically the thing. Since then, I'm actually, more or less working my way up. So the thing is, instead of using the escalator or the elevator, I have to take the stairs, which is fine because I've never played pro. So you have to find another way. You have to think about other ways how to get up there. So that's basically been my path so far. And I liked it, to be honest, and I still like it. So can't complain, to be honest.
That's brilliant. Now, to get a brief background of who you are, tell us, who are you, where were you, and where are you going?
Marcus Urban. Yeah, it's actually really easy name, even for foreigners. That helps a lot. Right now, coaching educator, nuts about sports, to be honest. That's why I'm still recovering from the Super Bowl due to the time difference. It was a little challenging getting.
I didn't watch it live, so respect to you.
I did, to be honest, and it, of course, it was the longest Super Bowl in history. That helped.
Yeah, of course, it's the extra, overtime, everything. Yeah,
quite good though. To be honest, that's why I'm a little sports nuts. Right now, I'm working for Union Berlin as the head of education, responsible for all kinds of coaching education projects. Besides that, working for the DFB and other FAs within Germany. I study sports and exercise science, as well as business administration. As a second degree, I also got a master's in education. I always try to combine, that's why a traveling part comes in, besides the US, where I went to school. I always try to combine university / education with traveling. So I kind of went to various places with some kind of exchange programs, such as Italy, Australia, Norway, France, the Bahamas in between, and actually wrote my master thesis in Brazil. So it could have been worse. And I thought it triggered so much how you can basically combine soccer in this case, or football / sports, will work. So I think getting to know other cultures, other nations, and I think it's really a common base to talk about. It doesn't matter if somebody's actually from Iceland, from South Africa, from Australia, whatever. You've got a common bond because just you talk about the sport, the passion you like, which in this case is football, which is sport, that really helped. That's why I kind of also ran some coaching projects in Poland, in China, Tanzania, Egypt, stuff like that. Yep, that's pretty much it. Soccer wise, besides traveling, working in Germany, the highest league I worked in was second division as a sports scientist with Dynamo Dresden, second division, second Bundesliga in Germany. I mainly worked in a senior level, mainly fourth league. Yep. Besides that, that's it. Just feel free to ask.
It's a long CV. Yeah, feel free to ask about one of the above, the many bullet points on this list. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot I'd like to unpack. One thing I kind of want to talk about is how you connect, how you kind of phrased it was this travel with sport and then also learning, connecting cultures. Was this kind of, I guess, when did this click for you to bring this into your life and bring it really to the forefront and kind of how you live your life?
Yeah, I think, yeah, first time I got exposed to coaching back in the US, because I noticed even playing in high school in the US, just how it helped me to socialize, to get to know people and stuff like that, because just playing with them, playing with some people from Italy, playing with, I mean, it was Texas, so they did have some Mexicans and stuff like that. And it really helped because you could really talk and you were kind of included right away. You were part of the team. And I thought right away, hang on, that's so much fun and it's so amazing getting to know other people, getting to know their understanding of the game, because for me, the game is also part of the culture. You can see how people play football. It's part of their culture. If you look at Norwegians, they play normally. They play it another way than South Americans, or even Argentinians play it a different way than the Brazilians, more or less. Just the understanding of the game is differently in each country. And just, I think it kind of mirrors, reflects a little bit the culture. And so it really, yeah, basically it was the start, the initial push for me to think that's amazing how you can combine my two passions.
Yeah.
Football and soccer, whatever. And traveling in other nations, other cultures, other people. I thought, hang on, if I can combine that, that'll be jackpot. So I need to find a way how I can do that. And so far I was lucky enough, I found a way how I can do that. That's why I really like those international coaching courses where you guys actually attended, because just all the world comes together in Bad Blankenburg, more or less. I mean, it's a freaking little city in the middle of nowhere.
What a melting pot. What a place for a melting pot, huh?
Exactly. It's not the first thing you talk about melting pot. Usually it's more like New York and stuff. No, it's Bad Blankenburg. So you can learn so much just exchanging ideas, exchanging cultures, approaches, stuff like that. Because I think, especially in soccer, there's not the way. There are various ways to achieve the goal, which is literally the goal, basically. So it really helps.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why it happened first time. And then also in Italy, or even Australia, when I was able to coach in Australia, stuff like that, I was able to enough to shadow a little bit at Trondheim, at Rosenborg Trondheim, stuff like that. So that really helped me to learn a lot. Also, I played some futsal in France, get to know other people, get to know things. So, yep. That was basically the start.
I feel like I know the answer already, but what is the German style and how does it reflect in the culture?
I think we were known, and I think we're still a little bit known for at least being tactically quite good, being dedicated to the game, understanding the game, stuff like that. Yeah, and back in the day, we were the ones running a lot and always being competitive. What's the phrase? Basically, a game last 90 minutes and at the end, the Germans win. And the Germans are only beaten once you're in the bus or something like that. I think those are our virtues, our features. That's what the Germans brought to the football soccer table. And I think that's what we still bring to the table, especially the tactical issue. If you just look at the coaches, I mean, right now, at least if you look at the table, we are not within the top five. But if you look at the coaches, I mean, just Jürgen Klopp is a pretty good coach. He's well known. Thomas Tuchel is quite successful. Those, I think, right now, the testimonials. I mean, those were the ones that won the Champions League. Even guys like Pep Guardiola, those guys worked in Germany. Carlo Ancelotti worked in Germany. Nowadays, Xavi Alonso is quite famous with his winning streak and stuff like that. And he played and works in Germany. He got his chance to basically show what he can do with Bayer Leverkusen. So I think it's still something we're good at.
What do you think the connection is with coaching in Germany, and why it seems that maybe the coaching from Germany is a lot more successful than currently the players or teams?
I think right now, because I mean, especially in coaching, I think organization structure helps. As a player, I think you need to be less structured sometimes. You can't just be creative. But in order to have organization and structure, it always helps to be a good role model. If you want your players to be on time, you better be on time as well. And I think those are features a lot of Germans still have. It's still in their culture, stuff like that, dedication, punctuality, like all those basics. And I think those basics help a lot being a coach, especially role model wise. I think also the education is still quite good, and also the infrastructure for education. You need to have some kind of good infrastructure and some kind of good organization. I think there are a lot of good coaches all around the world. The question is how you get the chance to show what you can do and how the ladder works for the coaches. And I think in Germany right now, also having the infrastructure with a lot of youth academies and stuff, we do provide some opportunities to work in soccer, to work in football. And I think that also helps to develop the coaching quality, because you only can develop a quality if you have the time to work mainly full-time in football and soccer. Because if you don't, it's just a matter of, I mean, of course, football is fun and it's fun to work in it and to do stuff like that, but you can't put fun in your fridge. So at the end of the day, you need to earn some money with it. Mm. And I think that's an advantage right now in Germany as well. There are a few jobs around. If you're good, you can work in soccer and football. And I think that's an advantage in comparison to other countries.
And kind of coming back to what you said in the make your own path question about you kind of having to go outside of the field to get maybe certifications because you were never a pro player. And I think maybe especially our audience outside of Germany would be very curious to know why that is. So what are the barriers in terms of like trying to get your licenses the same as someone who had played pro?
I mean, being pro has a big time advantage in the first place because you've got a network. Because most of the times, you might have played, you might have been in the same locker room as the technical director that works at whatever club. You know those guys. I mean, it's an elite group. There are not too many players that played pro, so they kind of know each other. Or you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. That really helps. And people that haven't played pro need to rely on different things. I think a good example for that might be Thomas Tuchel, for example. This guy never played pro, but he studied sports and exercise science. Same as Jürgen Klopp. I mean, and Jürgen Klopp played pro. He played second Bundesliga, but he's always talking about himself about not being a pro player, not being that good. But I mean, he played second Bundesliga. Don't get me wrong. That's still
would pro. Have loved to play second Bundesliga. So
exactly. That's like, he's like, oh, was a shitty player. Like, no, dude, you are like,
If he's a shitty player, what am I? God damn.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. And I only play like semi-pro. Is he saying stuff like that? I mean, of course he's not Zinedine Zidane. Of course. But still, I mean, he still was a pretty good player. I think Jose Mourinho, I think he studied psychology. So those guys found the back door because they knew I don't have the credibility. Because if Zinedine Zidane says something, I mean, he could tell me, jump out of the window, and I would say, all right, Zizou, you tell me you won the Champions League, you are world champion, you won European, whatever you want, I'll do it. If a coach like me would tell a player, all right, do that, he would like, are you nuts? Why should I do that? So I think...
So there's a respect that comes into it.
Exactly,
respect to the player.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think you need to have another edge. You need to focus on something else. Mm-hmm. If I haven't played pro, I mean, I still believe it really helps if you played the game. Not necessarily as a pro player, but it really helps if you played the game, if you understand, especially as a coach, how a locker room works, how hierarchy works within a team and stuff like that. I think those are essential points that really helps. However, if you haven't played pro, like most of us, to be honest, especially to your listeners, I think the majority hasn't played pro. So you need to find something else you bring to the table. And so I focused on licenses. Like I did an additional license in SNC. I did my coaching license, stuff like that. So I think you need to find a different path. Maybe you do more shadowing. You work with the youth academy. You started working with younger players and stuff like that to basically learn about the game from a different path, basically. We just talked about how people get to the same goal using different routes.
Yeah.
So I think that's why people that haven't played pro need to focus more on, let's say theory, or to learn tactical issues just by the book and still try to implement it in practice sessions and just try it. So I think that's why it is really important to do your coaching license. It really helps you to gain knowledge. I mean, all of us kind of have a knowledge because we're exposed to the game. I mean, it's hard in Europe. If you live in Europe, it's impossible almost not to be exposed to soccer, to football. It's within the European cultures, within the European DNA. I could ask somebody from the bus stop and asking about offside. He could, I think 98% of the people could actually tell me how it works.
Rules, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's one advantage in Europe. It's hard to find in US, no offense, but you've got different focus.
Definitely right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, it's a great point too, because just from a player's perspective too, I mean, the one thing is we have to, like we said, respect, but we also have to trust that the knowledge that we're hearing will benefit us and benefit the team towards success. And I think, although maybe it's not the best, I think a lot of the times as players, we think, oh, like, what does he or she know? Like, they didn't play higher than me, or like, what do they know?
Exactly.
And I think it's such a good point, is to kind of have all of this different type of knowledge to explain, to be able to work with people well in an empathetic way, because there's a lot of coaches that I've had that I can tell when they kick a ball, I'm like, I don't know about this, like that form, I'm not really sure about this. But to bring in the other knowledge and stuff, it's like, okay, this is, I'm learning. I understand this. I've seen the implementation. I see where it can be successful. Okay. Now my trust, now I'm bought in.
Yeah, exactly. Engage the players, use the players, implement your ideas. But for example, always ask the players for feedback. Let's say you've got a good form, you know, just some kind of something easy, like a passing drill or whatever, and you're not really certain about the distances, just ask the players.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I mean, they're doing it right now, and it's always a difference in the book and my ideas in reference to the players. What do you feel? Just, it also depends. Is it like an artificial pitch? Is it grass? Is it wet? I mean, there are so many circumstances that pay into that equation. I think there are so many things to consider. Why not asking the players? They're doing it right now. Yeah. I think give them some power, engage them, really helps you. And I think it even strengthens you as a coach because sometimes participation really helps, because the players notice, hey, hang on, he's actually listening to us. I mean, sometimes as a coach, you're the one with the final decision, and you're
there's
the
a
bad
balance,
guy.
right?
Exactly. And I'd rather ask, I really give a player the power to tell me, okay, just put the cone 2 meters further down, then, okay, what do you think about the formation at the weekend? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's always, especially I like the balance thing. So it's always some kind of scale. You have to think about it. I give power to players concerning stuff like that, so they feel thought about. And then about other decisions, you're the decision maker because you're responsible. I mean, if it doesn't work most of the time, you're the one. Your job is at stake. It's not the, they won't fire the players. They will fire the coach. So of course, you're the one being responsible.
Yeah, that's a great point. Also, too, of course, talking here, we know that that's the right approach and the best approach to get 24 players on board. But for many coaches, it could be difficult to set aside the ego and say, oh, no, I'm the coach. I make all the decisions. Whereas that can be counterintuitive and you lose a sense of maybe leadership capital by not getting feedback from the players. And eventually you can lose the group.
Totally agree. I think it needs to be authentic as well. I mean, there's some guys that are more status alpha male in this case. And the question is how to strengthen your position, and just being rock hard all the time, I think, doesn't really help. But again, it needs to be authentic. Don't just pretend you're being nice and being participative. It's just, I mean, play as human beings. Sense if it's honest or if it's just some kind of role you're playing. I think it needs to be authentic. And if you look at leadership models and stuff like that, I looked at a lot of those things. The most successful leaders were the ones that actually knew their strength, and they also knew their weaknesses. So even within your team, if I do know I'm pretty good with tactics, but I do lack empathy, so I might need somebody in my coaching staff who is pretty good with empathy, because that's the thing that's missing. So in order to be successful, you need, of course, there needs to be some kind of cohesion within the team. I think just reflecting the own strengths and weaknesses really helps a good coach as well.
And then kind of bringing that into your role with Union Berlin, being the head of coaching, and well, the head of, it's the head of education and coaching, right? Would be the more specific title. So kind of bringing in a lot of those things that we just talked about and things you learned, what is that kind of, what is that role like in a day to day, and how have you implemented some of these thoughts and ideas and beliefs?
Well, basically, we do have a cooperation with the Berlin FA. Germany has 21 FAs within the big country Germany, for example, Berlin. And the FAs are allowed to run C and B license, B plus, which is youth elite, as well as A plus and pro are done by the DFB directly by the German FA. So we have a cooperation with the Berlin FA, and we run C license and B license in basically in a partnership with them at clubs, at satellite clubs we work with. We run nowadays, it's called Kinder Certificate. It's basically for, let's say you've got a dad that brings his kid to the training, to the practice session, and he notices there is no coach, and he thinks, okay, I've played myself, let's do it. I mean, I bring my kid anyway, so let's start coaching. Like 80% of the coaching starts. And let's say this dad only played mediocre level, let's say twice a week practice. And I mean, there's a huge difference between working with adults and working with kids. So this dad might be interested in getting a coaching license. And so we start off with like a Kinder certificate, like a kid certificate. How is coaching done? Like just some organization, like just some kind of long-term development model, what you do, what you should focus on with kids and stuff like that. We do all that in cooperation with the Berlin FA. We also ran renewals for B plus, A and A plus. For example, for the B plus, we're running a renewal actually this week in cooperation with the DFB directly at our stadium and at our youth academy, for all the coaches that have a B plus that are mainly around. Also, there are some people coming from Duisburg and stuff like that just to attend the course. Then we have more or less a cooperation with the BDFL. BDFL is responsible for all the A plus and UEFA Pro licenses. We run renewals with them. So my goal is that every coach that works at Union Berlin can get an education, that he gets an access to education as well as an access to his renewal, that he doesn't have to go some places, because the only thing most of the coaches don't have is time. So just make sure, make education accessible for them with no effort from the first coach of the first team, which has a UEFA Pro, down to the, let's say, the under 8 coach, which just starts, or maybe even for our satellite clubs that just start coaching. So that's my idea. I also have some kind of corporations running with some universities, and we run some internal education as well with, like, always institute something for physiotherapy and SNC, also with, like, bench training with, like, FlexFit. We run internal workshops, everything in-house. Everything we do in-house means less stress, less work for us, because we don't have to travel. So that's basically my goal. The more stuff we do in-house with Union Berlin, the better educated our coaches, our staff will be, and we also represent the club.
Right.
Because every time we run a workshop like that, a couple of people from outside can attend as well. And so yeah. I think it just really shows what we are doing and some kind of being a role model within the area and representing Union Berlin within the area, which is kind of important as well, because fans, spectators, the stronger our satellite clubs are, the stronger our other clubs in the surrounding are, in the long run, the stronger our youth teams get, because we get our players from the little clubs around. That's why we need to strengthen, we need to make them stronger and get better players, I think. Correlates a lot with having better coaches. If you have better coaches, I mean, there are some players that are just good.
For sure.
They have talent. So you can't really do something against it. Even if you're a shitty coach, if they're good, they're good. They make it. But let's say the majority of the players, they do have some talent. So you have to make sure this talent is developed.
Yeah.
You need basically foster it somehow.
Right.
And to do that, I think you need good education. And so we as Union Berlin, try to provide the surroundings for that. So that's basically my job in short.
Right. And how is this role that you're playing now as the head of education kind of developed your ideas and thoughts on educating coaches?
In sense of that, it's that you've got so many coaches and so many different approaches. It developed even more the understanding for also the needs, like the big differences between the needs of, like, the dad we just talked about who started coaching, and also the needs of, like, the assistant coach of the first team.
Yeah.
They're both coaches, but they have different demands in this case. And so I try to develop programs for each demands, basically. For each needs. That's basically the idea behind it. And considering my job, I got the exposure to all of that, from being Champions League to coaching under 7. And we still try to think about different approaches to solve each problem.
And I'm sure, obviously, like you kind of just described the scope from Champions League to under 7. What would be some of the main pillars, though, that I guess main themes, main things that Union Berlin, I guess, is passionate about and tries to instill at any level, no matter what?
I think one of the virtues, one of the most important things we try to implement or try to educate is just the love for the game. that you may have different approaches, but you need to like the game, the DNA, the working, the hardworking attitude. That's one of our main pillars. Also, that you always want to learn, the humbleness. I think that's really something you need to have as a coach and as a player. You always need to be hungry to get to know more stuff, and you're humble enough with stuff you already achieved. That's one pillar. And of course, the dedication to what you're doing. And I think those are the three main pillars we try to, yeah, basically tell our participants of the courses and just, yeah, share with other coaches. And I think especially the humbleness is something you really need as a person, as a coach.
And staying on, I mean, we've talked about many positives of the German environment and the culture surrounding football, but what about the weaknesses? What do you think are some of the biggest weaknesses in terms of coaching players, league structure in Germany?
I think right now we are losing a little bit of ground to the Premier League due to the financial abilities, let's put it that way. Because if you look at the richest club like Bayern Munich, I think they would be something lower league table within the Premier League, even though they are by far the richest club in Germany. I think sometimes organization is good, but on the other hand, I think bureaucracy is, I mean, there's always a thin line between being organized and having a lot of bureaucracy. So that's a little tricky. And yeah, league system wise, well, we just renewed a little bit of, we renewed a few things. Hannes Wolf thought about a new system for kids. Also, they renewed the system, going to renew the system for under 19th and Bundesliga and stuff like that. So let's see how that impacts, to be honest. That'll be, I don't know.
Time will tell in these kinds of things, right?
Exactly, just ask me next year. Exactly, that's basically trial and error. It's something they thought about it. I mean, they put a lot of thought into it. I think they didn't roll the dice and thought, hang on, okay, let's try that.
So, but what is it? What is it in the kid structure? What is it in the youth structure?
The kid structure is that you play like the Netherlands and Belgium, for example. You play. We developed this kind of acronym for Nino, like fun and Nino, like kid, that you play 3v3 on small goals, on smaller pitches. Basically, the idea is that the fields, the pitches grow with the kids. The older the kids get, the bigger the pitch gets.
The more same players thing,
for
involved.
Exactly. For example, you start with 3v3, for example, under 13th, you play 9v9, and under 14th, you play 11v11, stuff like that. So that's the approach behind it. And it's kind of difficult with infrastructures and stuff like that, because 9v9, you still need a full pitch. Yeah. Even though in the age group, they're used to having two games simultaneously and stuff like that. That's just, you know, theory versus how you're going to do it in big cities.
Yeah.
That's always a little issue. And then again, it's Germany. So between, I don't know, 12 and 1, you're not allowed to play because there's some kind of recreational break and you're not allowed to be noisy and stuff like that. There are so many rules.
It depends on where you are in Germany, I would say, from my experience. I think some take the what would be the calm time. They take that a little bit more seriously than I would say others, but yeah.
I mean, just in theory, you know, those are just issues that may occur.
Yep.
So you have to talk about stuff like that. I think talk about weaknesses, like Sean asked. I think our system just being organized is maybe a stronger point, but just being too organized, being too structured, having too much bureaucracy is definitely a weakness. Also about getting license in Germany, because you just don't apply. They're like, I mean, you probably have to hand in the birth certificate of a guinea pig. I mean, you guys apply. You know how much paperwork you have to hand in.
As guys who have been here for a while and had to get many visas,
yeah,
we know that.
Exactly. You're just saying hanging, you just right off the rainforest just for like any kind of
Person
application stuff.
certificate of a guinea pig. That is well said.
That's really funny. Is there, I guess, are there any, from your knowledge, because I know you're kind of consuming, you're always kind of looking abroad and outside, are there any systems or countries that you think like, wow, they're doing, I mean, I'm sure no one's doing it perfectly. That's never the case. But is there anyone that you look at and you're like, we should take more from them?
Well, I really like, I haven't checked too many systems. I did like the Australian system and the Icelandic system, because for example, Iceland is the thing is, whatever sports group you're responsible for, you need to have a license, which I really like. So of course, they provide more courses and make it more accessible for everybody. And I think that's a big advantage. Okay, now you can argue that like Iceland had like 300,000 people, and that's like, I don't know, Berlin has 4 million people. So just
yeah,
Berlin
it's a little
is,
different.
Scales are different.
It's definitely the scale is a different level. However, I like that, just, you know, just in a perfect world, I think that might be an idea. It also depends the costs, of course.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, I'm doing my A plus right now in Scotland, and to be honest, I really like their approach, how they handle things. Of course, it's bureaucracy as well.
Does anything stand out to you with the Scottish system in terms of what you're learning in there?
Different approach, more prescriptive in a sense.
Okay.
And then it gives you more freedom and more liberty on the pitch, but just at the beginning, it's also a lot of structure. I kind of like the idea, and I think that's talking about like having a variety of in your coachings that always helps. I would always recommend getting different ideas.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm really happy that I could do one of my licenses in Scotland, because just, I mean, I know the German system. I mean, I educate in the German system, so I'm German. I grew up in the German system, so I kind of know it. So it really helps to go to the island, basically, to go to Scotland and pick up some of their ideas, some of their approaches, because, of course, due to the proximity of England, they have a lot from the English system.
Yeah.
And
right.
Evidently, England is not doing too bad. I mean, of course, yeah, they invest a lot of money. However, they've got pretty good players as well.
Yeah,
and
it's
I
true.
Think it's always good to check out one of my goals for this year or maybe next year is to check out the French system a little bit more, and also the Portuguese system. With, for example, Benfica. I mean,
Producing
mean,
players
Portugal
like
total,
crazy,
it's
huh?
Insane. Exactly. They produce so many players, and we're not just talking one or two.
Yeah,
but
no.
Basically, accidentally, no.
Consistently, yeah.
Exactly. And different players. They are just right now, Germany has a big time discussion. We always produce the same players. We've got heaps of eights and sixes and maybe some tens, but we don't have any kind of wing backs and stuff like that. There are no strikers anymore because we always
True.
produce
Yeah.
the same players.
Yeah.
If you look at Portugal, I mean, they produce Grimaldo, who plays for Bayer Leverkusen, even though he was educated in Spain and stuff like that. I mean, João Félix, for example, they always produce quite a few good players all over the place, not just one position in total. And I think that's something remarkable and something we should look at. And so I think considering that, evidently, they're doing a pretty good job in Portugal. I don't know about the coaching system. However, it can't be too bad if you produce so many good players. I mean, there must be a correlation.
No. It makes sense to
exactly.
look at successful. It makes sense to kind of look in that direction. You know, you can't ignore
Same
success.
With France. If you look at France, how many good players they have. I mean, last World Cup. I mean, just if you look at the injured list, you could have easily
Their second team could compete. Without a doubt.
Your second team was still amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knew Kolomwani. Nobody knew him. And he just, I mean, and after that, he did pretty good at Frankfurt, but then he plays for PSG now, but nobody really knew him. And he was doing quite well at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Just as an example. I think they must do something right as well, evidently.
What would be your approach in trying to learn from these countries in terms of going there? Would it be trying to connect with the club in some way, maybe through Union
Exactly.
Berlin?
That would. That would be exactly, that would be the idea, maybe just to get an exchange with, like, I don't know, some, just talk to some clubs, let's say PSG, Olympique Lyon, or maybe something small like Bastia, Encore, stuff like that. Some clubs, talk to them. Okay, how is your league system structured? I mean, especially Course, which is on an island. Where do you go? How do you travel? How do you work with the players? How do you combine all that effort, all that time-consuming stuff with school and stuff like that? How it approaches with that? And that would be really interesting. Same with Portugal. I do know Benfica, for example, they have like 5 own teams within Portugal. For example, close to Porto, for example, they have some kind of Benfica Academy. They play in a league, which is like in a Porto league. And then if they're doing well out of those 5 clubs within Portugal, they just send the best players then to Benfica directly. Stuff like that. So I think just going to the clubs and talking to them, get an exchange, I think that would be the best approach. Maybe even attend some practice sessions, talk to the coaches. What was your idea behind that? Stuff like that. Just, you know, the normal thing. Just talk about football and you learn a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk to you about is this idea of a coaching philosophy, because I think it's such a buzz kind of term these days in terms of
it is.
Like, what's your philosophy? What's his philosophy? What's her philosophy? And then kind of being ingrained and maybe modeling after these big coaches. But how important would you say that is? I mean, to have that as a coach, or would you rather kind of stress the importance to have core principles and then adapting within maybe the team or the club or the players that you have?
I think having core principles is the main thing about core principles, how you want to play more or less. I mean, unless you're Pep Guardiola and you get a new team, most of the time you are coming to
have that luxury. You're coming to Bad Blankenberg.
Exactly. Like, I want him, I want him, I want him. Usually you're coming to a team and you have, okay, that's your team. Enjoy. Yeah. And you're like, okay. I mean, of course you play a different system. If you have, like, back in the day, Jan Koller, this huge, gets huge Czech striker, of course you play him differently than having Messi up front. I think you always have some, like you said, core principles. Do I want the ball? I don't. Stuff like that. How much possession do I want? Which idea? Some ideas you need to have, I think. But I think coaching philosophy in this case also means, like we talked about, that you kind of know how you are as a coach, what you focus on, what your main goals as a coach you want to implement in the team. And then look at it tactically, but also like look at it from a human standpoint, how you want to interact, how you want the team to be on the pitch, stuff like that, how to interact with the other staff, what things you want to implement in the team. I think that's also important. And then just, I mean, in general, as a coach, you need to adapt.
Yeah.
You've got, that's your team. Those are the given circumstances. Enjoy. The normal teams is just also about infrastructure. Where am I practicing? How many pitches do I have? Again, like, for example, if I use example like Course, it's on an island. Of course, you always have to adjust your schedule and stuff like that, because you usually have to travel. Every away game, you need to take the boat or the train or just the plane, whatever. You need to travel and quite far. So, of course, with that circumstances, you have to adjust your schedule, and somehow it also influences your philosophy somehow, because just you need to focus on different things. And I think in this case, as a coach, you need to be able to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost on the fly, it seems too. Like, you always have to adapt on the fly as well.
Exactly. Because just, as you know, I mean, being a coach usually is not the most secure job on earth. So you have to be successful basically within no time right away. So make sure you adapt, like you said, on the fly. Okay, that. I do that, and hopefully it works.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, adapt, adjust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And try again.
Yeah, I would say an investment banker isn't usually getting fired after 7 months unless they're doing something really, really wrong. You know, as long as they're putting in effort, they're not really getting fired like that. It's a different world.
Exactly. I mean, you had coaches, they were fired after 3 weeks. That's insane.
Yeah. There's you mentioned kind of one thing in terms of your core principles was, do I want the ball? Do I not want the ball? I mean, it probably happened a lot since kind of the Barcelona teams where it's just every coach seems to want the ball. And I think that's obviously as a player who likes to be on the ball, like I favor that kind of system too. But do you think that there's like, I think a lot of people are so negative towards the teams that kind of set up against the ball and are more defensive minded or more, I don't want to say Mourinho typed, but more, but in that sense, you know, like
looking to play on the counter.
Looking to play on the counter or something, but they kind of put there's this label that that's the wrong way to play. But I also come, and I kind of thought this, I guess I got a little earlier in my career, but I've kind of come to just, I guess, regard football as the system that wins is, you know, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day is the system. So to say that there's one right way to play or there's one good way and one bad way and one's negative football, I would love to hear your opinion kind of on that.
I think there's not the right way or the right system. I think, again, you need to adapt. Let's look at France. 2018, they won the World Cup with having, I think if you look at the stats and stuff like that, they never had the majority of possession.
Yeah.
But if you have guys up front like Mbappé and Dembélé, mm-hmm. I mean, just the more green they have, the better they are.
Exactly. And they're not going to do the majority of the work defensively. So to kind of have the security behind them, to have that blanket to say, okay, here's the ball, go flourish, would make more sense. Usually in international tournaments, the first Spain team, there hasn't been many teams that really dominate possession who've won. Italy in Euros was one that didn't. France, even Argentina, like, of course, they have players who can keep the ball, but they weren't a possession-based team in this last World Cup. You don't really see it in international tournaments.
I think 2014, Germany did. We had a lot of possession with like players like Bastian Schweinsteiger, Toni Kroos, and stuff like that. You had a different team. Mesut Özil, all those guys loved the ball. They were technically skillful. Even having like a center, two center backs like Boateng and Mats Hummels, they were quite good at the ball. So you basically, those center backs were little playmakers as well. Of course, with them, you can play a different ball, then just depends on the players you have. And I think 2014, Germany had a lot of possession. But you're right, most of the teams that actually won at the end weren't the ones having the ball all the time. I mean, Spain got killed as well with their system. Even nowadays, Barcelona, they kind of adjusted, and nowadays they have the ball less. I think right now Man City are the ones being really, really possessional-based.
They're kind of an outlier successful. Too, but they also employ four center backs a lot of the time too. So there, I wouldn't say, I mean, he thinks very defensively too.
Definitely. And just having players like Haaland and stuff with a lot of speed, they just adjusted as well. He kind of adapted to the demands as well.
Yeah, exactly.
If you look at it holistically.
For sure.
I think just, as you asked, I think the system that wins is the right system. I think the right way is, that's the senior football, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. That's the thesis right there.
I think the key element is to evaluate, analyze what players you have, what strength they have, what strength you have as a coach, what are your strengths, and then just basically lay it all out and design the perfect plan for that team.
So it's like evaluate, analyze, adapt, and it's kind of like
exactly
reoccurring. That's cyclical.
Yeah,
I like that.
If you have a game plan, and also like just always look at the opponent, of course.
Yeah.
Just in a big game, but in youth, just double check what you have, and then especially in youth systems nowadays, if you have like one talent, let's say you've got somebody like you, like got a good number eight, like a good number 10. And you are identified as the top talent, right? So now I need to find a system where you can flourish. Means, for example, with you, we could play, for example, 4-2-3-1, something like that, with a real number 8, with a number 10, or like a 3-5-2, something where you actually have center mids, stuff like that. That would be good for you because you can develop. Or let's say in youth, you might have been not the tallest player back in the day. So you need some. So maybe in order to flourish, in order to have the ball, we need to find a good, like, let's say a good number 6, a good holding mid for you to do the dirty work.
Yeah.
Because of all the time I send you in kind of duels with like 190 guys, 90K, that won't help. So just make sure in order to have the ball, you need somebody. I mean, you play the piano, but you still need somebody who is actually carrying the piano.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's why we adjust.
It's a cool phrase. Yeah, it's a cool phrase.
For the top talents, we need to adjust the systems, our system in the youth academy, due to the top talents, in my opinion, in order to make them flourish.
Yeah.
If I identify you as a top talent, we need to make sure you can develop. I mean, you've always been quick, but you've never been the most explosive type, which means on the wing, not really. Right wing back, not really. So more center mid, you need to like have the ball and stuff like that. You've got a good eye, you've got a good game IQ in this case. So we identify the position, it might work. Now we need to make sure you can develop. And we have to set everything right that you can develop.
Well said.
Good advice, good insight. Never heard it like that. Because also you pick out, so say you pick out Dylan on the team, but what about the other players? Is there a point where you say, okay, Dylan is the player that we should develop, we should focus on most, and this is the system that fits him best, versus bringing maybe not the entire group, but there's other players that also could be developed?
In each year, you know, like, let's be honest, in each year, you've got about 2 to 4 top talents in each year. Those are the top talents, the ones you think they're going to make it. We don't have to adjust. Especially in under 19s, under 17s, we don't have to adjust the system to the player that's number 24 or 25. They just, you know, he's in the team that we can play 11 versus 11. No offense, but just we're talking about elite sports.
And that's so like, you're talking about the level where there's a jump, the highest level about to happen.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. Exactly. That's where you see the potential. That's the player that might be able to get pro. So we need to make sure we do the best to put them on the road. So we need to make sure you can develop.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other players are there for you to practice.
Yeah.
Because 25 players out of 25, they won't become pro.
No, definitely
not. This is fairy tale land. So we just need to make sure that the other players get involved as well. And if you, let's say, you as number 10, you develop quite well, and you do a lot of passing, you win. Let's say, which teams are more focused? The teams that are losing or the teams that are winning? Of course, unfortunately, the winning teams get more focus. And so, which means also the player that's maybe number 7 or number 8 in the hierarchy, in the development rate, assessment, whatever you want to call it, even that player gets attention. Because due to your abilities, Dylan, let's say that's a quick winger. And due to you, you kind of highlight his strength, because there's a lot of good passes, a good of niche balls, stuff like that, through balls. And so you kind of emphasize his strength. But it only works because you have the ball. And like Sean, as a good number 6, always helps you that we have kind of possession. Or he helps you to have enough power to play those balls, to dribble and stuff like that. If I would always send you in defensive duels, you lose a lot of energy. So we need to make sure you can show your strength. And also Sean, as a good holding mid, as a good defensive midfielder, he can shine as well. because he wins all the duels, gives the ball to you. So again, we need to double check. But if like there's a winger, which is like roster 18, 19, that's fine. But most of the time, this player, no offense, just speaking out of experience and just statistics as well, this player won't really become pro.
Right.
He will, he might be able to earn some money with it, to be semi-pro or something like that. But most of the time, a player that is in the under 19th, under 17th, who is not top, top, hard. I mean, you kind of can see, back in the day, let's say Toni Kroos. I mean, you could see he was better than the other ones within his age group. And nobody had the idea to let him play center back. Why? Even though all those good players, he would have played even well as a center back, just with his calmness, his passing game and stuff like that. He still would have won something. But I think playing where he played, he shined way more. He got way more emphasis and he could work on his strengths way more. He could bring way more to the team and to the whole game than playing center back.
Yeah.
I think that's why for, we just talk about talent development, right? So that's why I think focusing on a few players within a team sport really helps.
Yeah, it makes sense. But one of the things I like about, I guess, the German system, European system is kind of, there's so much time and effort into getting those players that to help them, like you said, not everyone's going to make the jump, but getting enough players to make the jump or making it more accessible for players to make the jump. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of kind of the barriers in US soccer and US youth soccer, where there we have the pay to play model and families could be paying between, I think it's like 1 and 3,000 and sometimes even more in certain cases if you're playing for the academies or things like that. And I think that kind of hinders how many good players you could actually prepare to make that jump when they get into their 17, 18, 19 year old kind of lifestyle and careers.
No doubt, totally agree. You lose so much talent because I think becoming pro should be should be decided by the feet of the players and not by the wallet of the parents.
Yeah.
So for us, football is basically the cheapest thing you can do, because the only thing you need is basically get a pair of shoes. And the club provides even the gear. I mean, in the US, you even have to pay for the gear. That's just for the uniforms and everything. So you sign up for a club in Germany. There are heaps of clubs. And if you're good, step by step, you can gradually develop. Even if you don't become pro, it's still good because you do a sport. And just moving, getting just the social things.
The team environment. While doing
teams,
yeah.
Exactly. They're just the how you work as a team and stuff like that really helps you to become, in my world, in my opinion, to become a better person.
Yeah.
If you have an idea how a locker room, or how it works on the pitch and stuff like that, it really helps.
Yeah.
So I think in this case, Germany or Europe in total is easier. The access to football, to soccer is way easier because you don't need anything. And even after, because due to the club system, even after you graduated from high school or even after university, you don't drop. In the US, it's basically let's say 90% do some activities, some sports in high school. Then if you go to university, you might be the chosen one that's still attending any kind of sports, still participating, even
the
less.
Chosen one.
Yeah, exactly, the chosen one. And then after university, you're rather pro, which almost nobody is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might quit.
Yeah.
So basically, that's just a waste, because you already developed so many athletes and stuff. And then you're
exactly.
Like in your mid-20s and you just quit. Why? Why?
Yeah, done after that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's so
why? I mean,
I love when you go to a field on a Sunday and there's 30 and 40 year olds playing, you know, like
exactly.
I think that is so beautiful, like that's amazing
for sure. That's just our culture. And
yeah.
Even like you always play, I mean, that's for example, within within the coaching group, within the staff of Union Berlin, every Friday we play together. That's like the
that.
Just we play yeah. football. Bayern Munich is doing the same thing. So many clubs in Germany, like the staff, we usually play football, of course. It just makes sense. But if you're not enough people because due to away games or injuries or somebody's sick, you play something else because it's just part of the DNA that you work in a sports environment.
Yeah.
You do something together, and the best thing you get to exchange. I mean, so the under 13th coach talks to the under 19th coach and stuff like that. So it's not a sport within a sport, a team within a team. Basically, you talk to each other.
Yeah.
And the same thing. And a lot of companies do stuff like that as well, or just you play in co-ops. So even let's say you've got the guy that's working as a lawyer, talks to the guy that's just working, that's just a bus driver, and they all play football in the same club. So you're not basically you're not stuck in your own bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the biggest advantage. Exactly. That's the best way. Just use. Yeah, sport, football in this case, is like
icebreaker.
Yeah, just incubator for social life.
So many things.
Case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think when we kind of talked about some of the weaknesses and strengths of like German structure, I think that is one of the biggest strengths in terms of the accessibility at any age, at any level, to be able to play. I think there's hardly any barriers in it, and I think it's amazing that you can have your full career and still kind of be in that team environment, where I think in the US, like, we have our men's league things and things like that, but it's more just like, you're just coming to play which is also great, but you're just coming to play like once a week in here and things like that. But I think being in the team environment and having like a goal to work towards is also such a beneficial thing. And I think there was more things like that installed in America. I think a lot of more people would actually kind of buy into it, but there's just that just it's not really a thing. I mean, in some cities you'll have different things, but it's not definitely not across the board.
True. I think that's definitely just the whole club structure. I mean, you could do the same thing. I mean, we've got the same club structures for volleyball, for tennis, all that stuff. That's
yeah, and they're ingrained. Yeah.
I think for the majority, for the grassroots stuff like that, it helps.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you look at the universities and stuff like that, your facilities and the infrastructure, it's just insane. The kind of infrastructure and the money the US spends,
it's crazy,
on
yeah.
It's exactly on infra. I mean, you played in Europe, you've seen the infrastructure. I mean, if I look at our infrastructure, Union Berlin, we played the Champions League this year. We don't even have the infrastructure of some universities you have in US. Soccer wise, and that's not even the first sport. That's incredible.
Well, they don't have to pay $50,000 for tuition to join Union Berlin.
That's true.
So I think that's kind of that's the difference there.
Makes sense. Get your point.
Money adds up, you know, it's mathematics.
Yeah, true.
But there was one thing too that it's been kind of current in the news lately too. Especially in Germany, and I don't know if our viewers around are as tuned in as we are, but we spoke a little bit about the difference between, I guess, the Bundesliga and the Premier League, and there's a lapse, and it seems to be kind of growing, and it's tough because obviously the Bundesliga, like, you want to compete with these leagues because you don't want to be that quote unquote farmers league. You don't want to be five leagues down, six leagues down, then the best leagues. But I also think what's beautiful about German football and the leagues is it's not as commercialized, and there's still so much power to the fans and accessibility to the fans to have a say. I mean, when we talk about like the 50+1 rule, and to give just a little background to viewers or listeners from around the world, like, there's been many protests against the DFB from fan groups who don't want necessarily too much outside investment from investment groups like, I think, BlackRock and maybe investment firms from Saudi Arabia, because they believe that that will shrink what they see as the important thing about football in German society.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly, that's the main reason within the last games, the famous tennis balls were always on the
long
pitch.
Stoppages, yeah.
Exactly. That's why you've got like stoppage time, like 26 minutes or something like that.
Did you see the one for the HSV against Hanover where they put a bike lock on the post? Did you see that? And then the bike lock was like the combination was 50, and then they put like a plus sign on the middle, and it was 50 plus 01 was the bike lock. And the fans and the ultra groups on the other side said like the key is 50 plus one and like a tifo and a banner. I thought that was so funny.
Well, but it's a thin line, to be honest, because it just attended, for example, Union Berlin game versus Wolfsburg. And we had like a break, then another break, then some more stuff, and was really close. They would have canceled the whole game.
And yeah, I think it's tough. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, I do understand. I think the fans,
but it's,
and supporters,
it's working
got their
though,
point
isn't
across.
It?
Let's see. I mean, private equity and stuff like that. I mean, it's still sport. I think that's the most important thing we just talked about: club structure and all that things. That football is a part of society.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that'll stay like that. If BlackRock, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they are investing money, not just out of altruism. They just don't want to be nice. You invest money.
Yeah, that's not why they're investing right. money. Yeah, of course not.
Exactly. So, like, hang on, I do have like a billion left over, so just put it somewhere. I mean,
just exactly. Out of the kindness of their hearts, they want to invest in in German
Definitely
soccer.
Not,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. So that's why right now, I don't know. Of course, there's so much money involved and so much business involved. Of course, question is, how you could still strengthen and empower the league and stuff like that, close the gap to British league or even clubs like PSG, because for them, money is not a matter, and still stay independent. I mean, that's the most important thing.
True to the core values and fan say and things like that. Yeah, I agree. It's a difficult question, isn't it? Difficult answer.
It's really, really hard. And I think that, again, that's not the answer. I think there's so many parts of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it needs to be decided individually all the time. Let's say, for example, BlackRock, they invest, it's fine. But maybe after 5 years, they decide, I rather like hockey. So, okay, let's pull out the money and just, enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
And so after that,
could be too easy
the club
for them
will,
to do that.
Exactly. Just done like that. And they're like, okay, now let's say they've got a new CEO and the CEO likes to play golf.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's rather invest money in golf. Yeah. And then like you're losing, let's say 80% of income.
Yeah.
So you would kill the club. I think there needs to be some kind of parachute for the clubs as well. And right now they do have a parachute because they rely on various investors. So I think it's really hard. This decision, I mean, I think you should put a lot of thought into stuff like that.
Evaluate, analyze, adapt. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
They got to listen to listen to the pod, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. And Marcus, goals for the future, any direction you are looking to head in the near short-term future, long-term future?
Or far future, yeah.
Exactly.
Would love to stay in the game, to be honest. Let's see. To be honest, just my main goal is basically stay healthy always and then have a look where it takes me. I'm really happy right now with Union Berlin. I have to admit that. I really like what I'm doing right now. Sometimes I kind of miss... I've been less on the pitch for the last 1.5 years. I've been more on the pitch. Sometimes I miss it. But to be honest, sometimes back in November, I do remember rainy days, minus 10 wind. And I was thinking, could be worse.
Yeah.
So I kind of miss it sometimes. So I don't know yet, to be honest. Main goal is to keep on working in football, to keep on developing, to keep on working with cool guys like you, stuff like that. Those are the main goals.
Love that. And before we get into some of our wrap-up questions, Do you have any, I guess, what are some of the advices you would give to both coaches and players that you see maybe that they don't do enough or that they should be doing more?
Stay humble. Always stay humble. Have a look around what other people are doing. Be happy that you do what you like.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people go to work on Monday and they're really looking forward to Friday. The only thing they care about is basically the weekend, and they only do that for money.
Yeah, and for sure.
For us, it's an honor to work in an area you like. Many people actually want to do that. So again, it's an absolute honor, and be humble that you work in something you actually like and you care about. So that's something. You work in football, you're part of the elite. If you look how many people actually like the game and want to work in that, and you do it, so just stay attentive and focused and always keep on developing. Those are the key factors, I think.
Brilliant.
And reflecting on the journey right now, what things would you say helped you to get to this moment? So in other words, why did Marcus get to this point, and why is he continuing to try and learn and get better?
I mean, I did have a lot of luck. Sometimes I met the right people, and apparently some of them actually liked me and gave me the chance. I mean, I put on my shoes myself, to be honest, with all the licenses I did and with the studies I finished. And then some people actually noticed me, and then they opened the door, but I had to walk through on my own, and I have to keep on working. If I do not keep on working, I do know somebody's going to pass me again, because it's a highly competitive area. There are a lot of sharks in the pond. So you just have to
they're
make sure you grow.
Too.
Yeah,
exactly. They're always circling, and they're always, the dagger comes always from behind.
Yeah.
You just make sure you keep on developing, you keep on working, you keep on developing on yourself, keep on developing your network, stuff like that. The more you know, the better it is in all areas.
Yeah.
I think that was me being lucky enough so far that I met some people that trusted my abilities and gave me the chance. And so far, I haven't proved too many people wrong. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to talk to you right now.
Yeah, there you go. Amazing. Marcus, we're going to head into our fast feed, our quick fire questions to end off everyone's favorite here. Woo-hoo. Your first one, favorite player growing up, and even now, favorite player now too.
I think back in the day, even though he seemed a little obnoxious back in the day, Matthias Sammer. He's from the same town as I am, Dynamo Dresden. I mean, he was 96, he won the European Championships. He was voted best European player. I mean, I really liked his desire and his passion to win. You could see he was greedy to win. He went nuts if he was not winning. So basically, that was like one of my role models on the pitch. Besides that, he was an excellent player. I mean, otherwise he wouldn't have been voted the European Player of the Year. I mean, 96, they had other players like, I don't know, Paul Gascoigne, Alan Shearer, stuff like that. I mean, other nations had really good players as well. So nowadays, hard to tell. There's so many good players with a lot of abilities.
Sean Wendberg. He's up there.
Ghani.
Top 20.
Top 20. Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. I don't know. Dylan Williams. I don't know. Anton Rico. Well, let's see.
That's a midfield there. That's a midfield
there. That's a really good midfield. I think ability wise, just what you can do, what kind of impact you could have on a game. Mbappé, Haaland, especially what I like about Haaland was his path coming from, I think, Molde. I'm not quite certain, but coming basically from Norway to Austria via, he didn't choose the biggest club right away. I mean, no offense to Dortmund, but he could have gone a different route. He could have gone to Bayern Munich, he could have gone to Man City right away, but he chose Dortmund to develop. Yeah. And then he played there. And then he went to Man City. I thought just he put a lot of thought and again humbleness and some idea into his decisions. So I think just because of that, I really like him. And of course, you can see this guy is just greedy to win as well, and he invests a lot of time as well, I think. And of course, you have to admit that what Cristiano is doing is amazing in his age,
still,
and what he accomplished in his career.
Yeah, absolutely. Favorite moment in football?
Actually, three. I think when we got promoted with Dynamo Dresden from the third league to the second league, just the emotion, the whole city went nuts. Within the coaching staff, then
cut out for me. They cut out for you.
It's all good though. I think it's just your question.
Then I think, secondly, promotion with like Bushoserda back in the day when we got promoted to the fourth league. I mean, we invested so much, we planned so much, we did so much for that. That's why I was really lucky. And also when we won indoor football, futsal, when we won more or less like this Länderpokal stuff and all the 21 federations play against each other, and we were the total underdog in 2016, we won the thing. And even more importantly, a lot of my players got selected for the national team.
Yeah.
And now the captain of the national team, Christopher Wittig, he's nowadays the captain of the national team. So I think that was, pretty
amazing.
Good moment.
Do you have a most difficult moment in football?
Always when a contract expires, I think.
That is a tough moment,
As real as it gets. Like you said,
exactly.
You can't put fun in the fridge. That's another
great exactly. Always, okay, we're coming to the end of the contract. Okay, keep on looking again, asking some people and stuff like that. So always a tricky moment.
Best advice you ever received?
Again, from Ralf Hauptmann back in the day, former captain of Cologne, former Bundesliga player. I worked a lot with him. And he said, always be who you are, always be authentic. Again, the same thing, humble, and always try to develop. And never be, always keep on going. If you stop, you regress. Keep on progressing.
Keep moving forward is one of our other mottos in here too. So
yeah,
we love
just,
that. We
just
abide
in
by
case.
That.
I mean, we all wouldn't be where we are. We always need to go the extra mile in this case.
Yeah. How about, we don't always ask this one, but as a world traveler like yourself, we have to bring it back. Favorite place you've lived?
I mean, actually two or three. Actually, I really liked Australia just for the weather, even though kind of 89% of the animals that can kill you. It's a lovely place, really cool people, nice weather most of the time. I really like Brazil for the food, the fruit, the weather, and really friendly people, really outgoing, just the culture. And Italy, it's not that far, but also friendly people, good weather and stuff like that. So I think those are the three spots I would choose
three-way
right
tie.
Now.
Yeah,
three-way tie. Best player you've coached?
Best player I coached so far. Who made it? Marvin Stefaniak. He's one of the best players I was able to work with. Also Yannick Müller of Dynamo Dresden as well. He plays in Darmstadt right now, first division. He was not the best talent, but he knew what he was able to do. And that was really good. Exactly. He knew exactly what he could do, and a really ambitious person, stuff like that. So a lot of credits and a lot of congrats to what he achieved.
Yeah. If you weren't in football, what would you be doing?
Good question.
That's always the best I answer am. Too, is like when a guest is like, I'll find out.
Exactly. I haven't thought about it yet. I mean, I did work in some other areas as well, but always kind of related to sports and
maybe somewhere in teaching.
Yeah.
Probably, but I don't know. I would definitely miss the traveling part and the competitive part of it. I mean, I really like working with people. I really like that and giving away some ideas and stuff like that. I really love that. Maybe doing something else, or maybe just doing some project management. I don't know, whatever.
Me either.
Hopefully you never have to know.
Didn't have to find out yet.
No, yeah. No.
Favorite book?
Alexandre Dumas. Monte Cristo. I think The Count of Monte Cristo would be the English terminology. Ensemble Dumas. It's about this guy who was basically set on an island, even the though he didn't commit the crime. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Count of Monte Cristo, Alexandre Dumas. That's one of my favorite books.
Alexandre Dumas. Okay, interesting. Nice.
Because he never gave up, even though he was betrayed by everybody within his all social surroundings. He never gave up. He met this guy that helped him a lot, his mentor. I mean, okay, about the revenge part, we could talk about the revenge part.
No spoilers, no spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers.
But I could definitely recommend that book.
Fair. Any quote or mantra that you live by?
Basically, never give up. There's always a backup plan. Tutte le vie portano a Roma, or all the way Springer to Rome, in this case.
Meaning?
There's always another way. There's always another way. If you focus on the goal, if I want to go to Rome, and this one way is blocked, look for another one.
Love that. Very nice.
Brilliant.
Marcus, we finally did it. We finally got to meet on a podcast. Yeah. I'm sure I don't speak for just myself. I can't wait for part two. Part two will be in person over some coffee or some nice tea in Bad Blankenberg. Yeah. We'll see. But we want to thank you so much for
Iceland,
coming on.
Norway.
Maybe in Iceland, Norway. You never
know. We'll see. Time will tell very soon. We'll see.
It's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much. Tusen tak. Can't really tell you how much I appreciated that time. Running out of superlatives. It's been a real pleasure. And hopefully see you guys soon in person.
Yes. Thank you, Marcus.
Special thanks again, as we always say, to Marcus. We didn't call him his nickname. He's also known as The Brain.
The Brain.
Because, and it's knows a lot about if you know him, if you spend a little bit of time with Marcus, like the name, I mean, probably just from hearing this episode, it makes sense because he is a wealth of knowledge, and it's not a fluke why. You can kind of see he's always searching. He's always looking to gain knowledge, to meet people, to understand their way, to take some of that. I mean, from the places he's been, the people he's met, the connections he's made, and the areas in which he's worked in and the people he's worked with. I was really excited to do this episode, and I think it definitely paid off. I think just his outlook on kind of, you can always bring it into coaching, but just that thing that we always came back to, which was evaluate, analyze, adapt, I think is such a key structure to have in any job or point in your life, because there's always going to be those times where maybe something's not going right or now how it's going to plan. Okay. Evaluate, take a step back almost, you know, and be subjective to it. Don't be biased or be objective, right? It's been a long day. Just see it from all sides kind of, and then we analyze it. And then we think, okay, this is why this happened. And then we adapt and then we implement the new things. It's so simple, but yet so integral and genius. And I think, I mean, that's something that's going to stick with me. Those three in that order is going to stick with me.
That's like a That's like how you just go about life, basically. Like you can put that into any situation.
Yeah.
Like evaluate what's happening around you, analyzes, like evaluating even more, and then adapt to the situation. It's like you can do that in every single situation. And it's probably
exactly,
a good idea to do, to take a step back and see it from, you know, not when you're looking through the binoculars, but like take a wide look, what's going on, how can I fix it, whatever the issue is, and then do it. But yeah, I mean, we had so many conversations with him at the coaching course already. So
that could have been podcasts themselves,
could have
right?
Been podcasts,
you know what
themselves.
I mean?
Exactly. So
this
it's
is
like,
really for us. This is take three. Sean and I each had like an hour long conversation with him individually. And then this is the group conversation now, I guess.
Right.
Actually,
but yeah, he's just
sometimes at night too, we would have very long conversations
like
over dinner. Yeah. I mean, but it's always great. It's always fantastic conversations.
Totally. And it's like you said, he has just a wealth of knowledge and experience. And like he said, he has to take the stairs to get to where he wants to go. So he's been at many different places and learned and taken bits and pieces from there, that often people skip a few steps or they skip a floor and they don't get that wealth of knowledge and experience that he has, because he's gone up every step.
It's a great point.
To get to the point he's at now, and he's only going to keep climbing. As he says, you obviously have to keep working and keep going the extra mile every day to get there, because it's a very competitive market.
You know what that is too? Is like, just exactly to build off what you just said, he turned his disadvantage of not being a pro player, not playing at that, into his advantage to now become this encyclopedia and, you know, wealth of knowledge and always searching for it. Like, he turned that disadvantage into his advantage to become more well-rounded as a coach, as a director of coaching, just also as a person too.
Yeah, just, I mean, just first of all, the ability to learn and then store the information to know, oh, that's how they do it in Brazil, or that's how they do it in France, or this small island in France, this is how they develop their players, and this is how they do it in Iceland or Norway, whatever it is. It's like he's making mental notes and remembering that.
Yeah.
And then to be able to put all that information and process it, analyze it, and then adapt to whatever situation he's in to implement the best method for whatever the given circumstances are. Like he said, with teams, usually you have to just adapt to whatever you're given.
Yeah.
And like we said, sometimes the best way to play is not always the most beautiful way. If you're a non-league football club and you're playing against Man City, you're not going to go out and high press them. That everyone would
Suicide.
Agree, not a good idea.
Yeah.
So that's what's great about football, is you can play in many different ways and still get a result at the end of it.
Exactly. I think I liked his advice too to players and coaches. Was towards the end of the episode, was, and he said it a few times, was one, the humbleness, which I think is something that obviously goes overlooked a lot of the times, but also to kind of combine the humbleness with knowing that what you're doing is what you love. And I think when you kind of come back to that, it's partially gratefulness and partially being present, like, holy shit, I'm either playing the sport I love or I'm teaching the sport I love and I'm around it on a day-to-day basis. I think when you kind of connect with that, I guess, synopsis a little bit more, you're more, I don't know, it's just there's more love into it. There's more positives to it. And I think that when you see what you do in your work that way, it only brings the best out in you to perform that job better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also,
really enjoyed that.
Just from his website, do you know how many languages he speaks?
I'm gonna guess, because he showed a few of them off. I don't know, like 6 or 7.
So there's German, obviously, English, which you've heard today, Portuguese, Italian, and there's like different levels.
Right, of course.
Of how it is, but Italian is still like over the 50%, and then French is around 50%, Spanish is around 50%, and then Norwegian is like just under 50%. So, I mean, kind of crazy. And to kind of plug him, if you want to know more about him, or if you want to contact him, see kind of the things maybe which you can work with him on or ask him questions, Coach Urban coachurban.de is his website. So coach, obviously, urban, urban.de. And you can learn more about him, ask him questions. I think he has a shop as well. So a wealth of knowledge that I think is always looking to make connections, always looking for the next steps in anything. And if you're listening to this and you're interested, please get in contact with Marcus. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Any housekeeping?
Us time. Us time. Layover hoodie, as we said, there are still some available. We did get a lot because it's such a great product. And I think hopefully it's shared with enough people who recognize its greatness as the best hoodie you will ever own. It's enough said, right?
I mean, yeah. Enough people have said
So I haven't heard one person say this isn't the best hoodie I own.
That's correct.
So zero just, of those. If you don't take our word for it, take someone else's. Take theirs. YouTube videos, love the support and the feedback we're getting from those. But as always, free support means the world to us. We're not asking for your donations. We're not asking for anything like that. And not too often, but the free support, just a click here, a click there, helps us grow and gets a review there. That puts us in more ears and in more hands and hopefully grows us and makes us get better and better product for you. And it's a circle of life.
Everybody wins.
I think that's the housekeeping. I'm trying to remember like what we would say on very early episodes in terms of like the housekeeping, but I think we just would over edit. I think we would edit this part out.
Plug and pass.
Fresh round of stickers too. We have to do a contest, Sean, for stickers. Cause there was a fresh order and we're sitting on some
I'll tell you what, the part of that competition will definitely include being subscribed to our YouTube channel. So just get ahead on that and do that.
Get a head start on that. Yeah, for sure.
That'll be step one. We'll have to think of something.
Consultations on the website is another one. Consultations for players who want to connect.
Yep. If you want a free layover hoodie, you have to run a mile under 5 minutes and it has to be recorded.
Well, I'm not putting that out there because I think some people will be able to do that. That's not real. There's going to be more.
There'll be more.
But as always, we love when you guys reach out and you have feedback or things you want to hear or people you want to hear on. That's all I got. I'm running out of air.
Yeah, good. So until next time.
Keep moving forward.
Keep learning.
And make your own path.
Footwork is sponsored by ourselves and great companies such as Kong Fitness. But we love to partner with new brands to make their own path, so get in touch if you must.
Footwork.club, the official footwork website, is now live, so make sure you go join the club and check out all the new content and all the new features. Find us on YouTube at Footwork Podcast. You better like and subscribe while you're there. If not, I don't know what to tell you.
Find us on Instagram at Footwork_podcast. Great time there. Twitter at Footwork Podcast. TikTok at Footwork Podcast, where we like to post dance videos. Those are great, but more importantly, amazing content for any dream chasers out there. Plug pass. Tell your friends, your enemies, your mother, your brother, your sister, your pastor. It doesn't matter who. Tell the mailman, your dog, anybody that can listen.
Like, subscribe, review, because all of that helps while you're there. We'll take whatever we can get to join the club.
Join the club. He messed me up. I mean, he can just mash it together, so it's fine.